The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. And now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic is on. Today, we will be tackling Parkinson's disease with my guest expert, neurologist Dr. Carl Ledoux. But first, this radio healthcare clinic and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, the largest in the country, are brought to you by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based health safety net. We make you a lay expert on your personal medical problems, with the result you'll better partner with your existing physician, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families. And so, this week we're going to be tackling Parkinson's disease, a very complex and well-known disease that was actually described back in the early 1800s. My guest expert, Dr. Carl Ledoux, received her Bachelor of Science degree in Chemical Engineering from the University of South Florida. She received her graduate education at Des Moines University in Iowa. Her neurology residency was completed at the University of South Florida in Tampa, where she was chief resident. She also completed a fellowship in epilepsy at the Wake Forest University. Carla is a clinical faculty instructor for USF School of Medicine. She is currently a neurologist in solo private practice here in Tampa. She is a general neurologist, but has a special interest in treating Parkinson's as well as multiple sclerosis, migraines, and Alzheimer's disease. Carla also has specialized training in Botox and Myoblock injections for dystonia and spasticity with over a dozen years of injection experience. Carla, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, Parkinson's disease, as I mentioned earlier, a very complex and important disease to recognize and initiate therapy, not just for the patient but for the family. Tell us, let's start at the very basics. What is Parkinson's disease?
Parkinson's disease is a degenerative disease of the brain. It is, in a broad sense, characterized as a motor system disorder, further subclassified as a movement disorder. The hallmarks of the disease are tremor, rigidity or stiffness of movement, what we call bradykinesia or slowness of movement, and poor balance, or what a neurologist would describe as postural instability. It's chronic, progressive, and it affects about 500,000 people in the United States, usually people greater than 50 years old.
Well, let me ask you, what I remember from medical school, with all these different symptoms typically do not appear simultaneously. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And can it be difficult to actually make a diagnosis of Parkinson's?
Yes.
That is to say, in its initial stages.
Very difficult. The early symptoms can be quite subtle, and what we describe as non-motor, meaning not those classic symptoms. They can be very gradual, can be very even more abstract, like anxiety, difficulty with driving, or cognitive executive function.
Wow. So that, you know, that's very interesting. So, I mean, those things you're describing here are clearly non-specific. And have cases been brought to your attention where someone has excessive anxiety, some slowness of cognitive function, and that's it? And you were able to make a diagnosis of Parkinson's?
Well,
a rare case?
With those symptoms, when someone comes in, they may be a very high-functioning individual with symptoms of they just know something is not right. And you have to listen. Mm-hmm. And then a careful neurologic exam often may bring out a subtle finding. And then often you have to observe patients over time before mm-hmm. you can make a firm diagnosis.
So, for example, are there tests you can run in your office to try to elicit a sense of rigidity or bradykinesia, slow movement?
There are a good neurologic exam, and an experienced neurologist often will bring out an index of suspicion. We're mm-hmm. suspicious, and we have to watch you over time.
Now, is that important to make an early diagnosis of Parkinson's? What can you do if you make that diagnosis early in the course of a patient's disease?
It's becoming more important there. Currently, there is no known disease modifying therapies. However, there's some data that is suggesting that even one of our current therapies, perhaps if started earlier rather than later, may actually modify the progression of the disease versus just treat symptoms. So it's becoming more important.
And we'll come back to that therapy. For my notes here, what therapy would that be?
Rasagiline.
Okay, so that's a medical therapy.
Correct.
How do you spell that?
R-A-S.
R-A-S.
A-G-I-L-N-E.
Okay. All right, we'll talk more about that later in the show when we focus exclusively on therapy. Okay, so here we have a disorder that is, as you said, neurodegenerative, and leads to these variety of symptoms and difficulty, mostly movement. However, it does have cognitive features as well, as you mentioned. A patient or a listener may wonder, is there an imaging test that could be done, a CT, MRI, PET scan, or other type of imaging test that can confirm a diagnosis, or is it exclusively a clinical diagnosis?
Currently, it is a clinical diagnosis. There is no one test, either CAT scan, MRI, PET scan, or blood work, that is confirmatory.
Okay. And just real briefly, what is actually going on inside the brains of these individuals with Parkinson's disease that leads to this difficulty with predominantly motor movements?
In exactly what is happening, and we don't know why, is that there is a loss of the brain cells in an area of the brain called the substantia nigra that produces a neurotransmitter called dopamine. When dopamine is lost, when those cells die, movement, smooth movement, and coordination of movement is lost. And you have to lose it's estimated about 80% of those cells before you actually become symptomatic.
Well, that's very interesting. So clearly, prior to becoming symptomatic, this disease has already taken a foothold. So in that regard, going back to your point earlier about making an early diagnosis can actually potentially help with a new, potential new therapy. So that still leaves a door open to potential to consider in the future other ways to make an earlier diagnosis where there's less than 80% loss of these cells.
Correct. And that's why we really do feel the disease has a foothold probably 10 years before someone has motor symptoms. And there's other things with what I was referring to as those non-motor symptoms, anxiety, depression, loss of sense of smell, GI symptoms such as constipation, apathy, sleep disturbances. These are all very common in Parkinson's and often predate the motor symptoms.
That's interesting. So, okay, so the earliest symptoms are the non-motor symptoms, it seems.
It's looking that way. Even things like body pain, you know, it was felt years ago that pain wasn't a part of Parkinson's, but that's clearly not true.
So the perception of pain. So are you saying then that the threshold is a higher threshold for pain?
No, the patients experience pain.
Okay, so it's a lower threshold for pain.
Yes, they have a different type of centralized pain that they just have a lot of pain that we used to think wasn't really related to Parkinson's, but we're really understanding that it is.
Well, this is very interesting, and I don't know that this information is generally appreciated by the broad medical community and other subspecialties. That is to say that these non-motor symptoms, I guess what we would refer to as the autonomic nervous system types of symptoms?
Well, that's even that's another symptom of Parkinson's. In other words, we used to think of Parkinson's as just a motor movement disorder involving the substantia nigra or basal ganglia of the brain, the movement center. But we know now it's clearly a very widespread disorder of the brain involving many projections from that area to and from that area of the brain.
Okay.
And its connections.
Okay. Well, this is actually what you put your finger on, to me at least, as a non-neurologist, is something very exciting, because what you're suggesting is because 80% of the nerve cells are lost by the time the classical symptoms of Parkinson's is identified, the fact that there are the other symptoms, if we're attentive, maybe the diagnosis of Parkinson's should come up earlier in the mind of the general practitioner or internist. Potentially able to make the earlier diagnosis and forestall or slow down the progression of this disease?
Well, certainly as new therapies, we hope, become available that are more disease-modifying, it's going to be important to recognize them early.
Potentially very exciting. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come right back for more on Parkinson's disease with my guest expert, Dr. Carl Ledoux, right here on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
Digital goddess Kim Komando here. Camcorders, cameras, HDTVs, computers, iPhones, and iPods. Make money online. Free software, websites, MySpace, Facebook, iBooks. Hackers, badware, and scumware. And, of course, you have me. It's the Kim Komando Show, where it's all about your digital life. Phew, I need some fresh air.
Kim Komando, Sunday afternoon at 2 on her new radio home in Tampa Bay. Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Health Care Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. And I am with my guest expert, Dr. Carla Ledoux. We are tackling Parkinson's disease. And on the line is Terry. Terry, are you able to hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine. Thank you.
Great. Terry is a patient with Parkinson's disease. He was kind enough to join us today and is a patient of Dr. Carla Ledoux's. And again, we thank you for being here with us. Terry, tell us about your specific case. How old are you now, and when did you first start developing symptoms, and what were your initial symptoms?
Well, I'm 59 now, and I believe I was diagnosed about 5 years ago. It may have been 6 years ago, but
okay.
My early symptoms were I became stressed over a lot of conversations going on at the same time. It was like my mind couldn't process multiple things. So if I was in a restaurant and there was a lot of people talking around me, or the loud noises of just the noise itself,
background, my body, white noise.
Yeah, I would just stress.
And, now, Terry, was that? I assume by your saying this, then that was definitely different than what you had normally been accustomed to doing. Your brain had previously been able to filter out the surrounding noise.
Oh yes, no problem at all. And one of the other things I noticed was I was having difficulty driving. It was like when I'd be driving, someone would put their I'd see the brake light come on, but it was slow. The process, my mind was slow, so it was a delay reaction. And so I found myself following cars farther and farther behind.
Mm.
And I reached a point where I wouldn't drive on interstate because I just didn't trust myself anymore as far as my reactions. But the main thing that was happening to me that I was starting to forget a lot of stuff, and my employees, I had several people working for me that telling me that I was saying something one day and the next day I was counteracting what I was saying, or saying I never said that. And I was here at home. We had a reunion on the 4th of July. And we were all talking about going on a reunion, having another reunion over at Universal Studios. And I was listening to him talking, and I said, what are you talking about, studios reunion? My wife said, you should remember we paid for it. And she laughed and went to get pictures, and I looked at the pictures. I had no idea. I had never been there. And actually, it was the next day that I called a doctor.
Now, these changes, did they develop over a period of days, weeks, months, or years?
I would say that it was over a period of maybe 8 or 9 months.
Okay.
And just progressively got worse.
And what type of, you said you, after you got to the point where you went to see the doctor, what kind of doctor did you see initially?
I went to my general practitioner who I'd been seeing for over 20 years. And he started running a lot of tests, ran me through a complete circuitry of tests. His concern actually at that time was that maybe I was developing Alzheimer's.
Okay.
And he was very thorough, but he never pinned it down, never found what he needed. And then he had me go to Dr. Ledoux.
Okay. And so some of the tests that were performed, I imagine, were blood tests, was CT scan?
Yeah, brain scans, the blood flow scans, and I can't remember all of them, but he ran me through a full spectrum, and heavy metal scans. And
for toxins?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for just about anything. But during that period of time, things were progressively getting worse, not better.
Right. And so the period of, days or weeks of evaluation? And at which
he actually took about 3 months.
Okay. All right. Meanwhile, your symptoms were progressing.
That's correct. Yeah, I reached a point where I no longer knew my grandchildren. My children's spouses' names were gone. Good friends, I couldn't remember their names anymore.
Cool. Well, Carla, so when you saw Terry for the first time, some of these things sound like it could be an Alzheimer's type of symptom, not knowing your children's names anymore. Is that wrong, or...?
Well, it's not wrong, and it's certainly correct to proceed with ruling out what we call treatable or reversible causes of cognitive decline.
Mm-hmm.
But when I saw Terry, there were some very subtle signs that he could be starting with early Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. As I recall, he had some very subtle rigidity on exam, mm-hmm. meaning stiffness when I examined him. And something we look for with neurology, we watch people's gait or walking very carefully and watch their arm swing very carefully. And there's just some very, very subtle changes. Mm-hmm. And combined with these non-motor symptoms, see, Terry's a classic example in my mind of someone who some of his early signs were trouble with this visual spatial processing, which is what is required to drive. I mean, when you think about driving, you have to process all these visual inputs, you have to react to them quickly. You have to make a quick judgment, and you have to have a motor output like putting on the brake.
Mm-hmm.
He was having a great deal of difficulty with that and severe anxiety over handling all this. He was having cognitive problems.
Mm-hmm.
And then combined with some subtle exam findings and combined with the fact that usually Alzheimer's doesn't present that quickly. The cognitive mm-hmm. decline is not that fast.
Mm-hmm.
And combined with all the negative ruling out other causes.
So, and the his findings as far as his memory and not knowing his children's names and so forth, that is also can be consistent with Parkinson's?
Patients can have these cognitive mm-hmm. problems.
So the key in your evaluation when you evaluated Terry for the first time was in addition to the cognitive findings, you were able to identify the rigidity, the stiffness, the gait, the arm swing, some of the motor components which tipped you off because clearly, and correct me if I'm wrong, Alzheimer's, other types of neurologic diseases don't have those components?
That's correct. There's some findings that are more unique, although subtle, and it was very subtle in mm-hmm. Terry's case. It would just lean you more in that direction, also combined with what his primary care physician ruling out all of the other
right.
possibilities. So It's really a ruling things in, ruling things out. It's putting it all together.
Okay.
I had noticed tremor actually for 3 to 4 years in my left hand, but it wasn't something that was always there. But there was a slight tremor when I finally went to see the doctor, and also my left arm didn't swing
mm-hmm.
When I walked. My right arm would swing normally, but my left arm would almost is tanged down. It was very little movement on it.
Well, let's take a little bit. We have a minute till our next break, but Carla, tremor. I don't want everyone out there with a little bit of tremor to think immediately, oh gosh, I've got Parkinson's. Is there not a classical tremor for Parkinson's?
The classic tremor, just as Terry mentioned, it often does start on one side, unilateral tremor at rest. And it can be, again, very subtle, very intermittent.
Is it a pill rolling type of tremor?
Yes, often, but not always.
But there are other types of
tremor. right, that are not Parkinson's.
All right, we'll come right back with more on Parkinson's disease and Terry, as well as our guest expert, Dr. Carl Ledoux, on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We'll be back in a flash.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. It won't avert bankruptcy for GM, but it could make the company's reorganization go more smoothly. A representative for the company's bondholders says most of them will support an improved offer under which the automaker's $27 billion in debt would be swapped for a 10% share of GM, plus the opportunity to buy a greater share later. What did she mean when she said a wise Latina woman might make better rulings than a white man? Senate Republicans are telling the Sunday talk shows they'll be looking for Supreme Court nominee Sonia Sotomayor to explain when she meets with them. Pakistan's defense secretary predicting that his country's army will retake the whole Swat Valley in 2 to 3 days, even though his own military spokesman says that assessment might be a little optimistic. And defending champ Rafael Nadal, dominating force whenever he plays the French Open, is out. He was ousted today in straight sets. This is SRN Sports.
Hi, I'm Steve Skegis of It's Your Money. If you're tired of being manipulated by the ups and downs of Wall Street and watching your hard-earned money slip away, then call me right now at 1-866-630-5353. I will show you how to regain control of your money by eliminating your risk. After all, it is your money, not Wall Street's. So be sure to join me, Steve Skegis, Saturday at noon, right here on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2009 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com, and if you have not found relief for your painful red dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back, Focus on Females. We are tackling Parkinson's disease with guest expert Dr. Carl Ledoux. And Terry's on the line. Are you still with us, Terry?
Yes, I am, Doc.
Okay. We left off talking about tremor. You had a tremor that you had noticed subtle tremor, that is, for a while. I think you said 3 or 4 years before the other symptoms began?
That's correct.
And would you describe your tremor as though you were rolling a pill, or how would you describe
it? Well, no, actually, when I first noticed it, I would go into a meeting, and, of course, they'd bring coffee and usually in styrofoam cups, and you'd hold it in your left hand, and you'd be writing with the right with a pad. And I noticed that when I tried to, occasionally my hand would just start shaking and actually almost lose control. And so I learned to actually drink with two hands, to bring my two hands together, because I couldn't grasp the styrofoam. It didn't seem to happen with a solid cup. It was just something that was light and something that I couldn't grab a hold of. And I never paid it any mind. That was something I just noticed real early on.
Did your tremor appear only when you were holding on to something, whether it be a cup or some other item?
You know, it's hard to remember back now, and I wish I could say, but that's the only thing that comes to mind because it was so prevalent to me. But it may have been, but I don't remember a lot of the things back.
Sure.
That was like 18 years ago.
Carlo, what can you say to the folks out there that are listening that may have a benign essential tremor that they should not be concerned? In other words, how can you help people listening to differentiate if they should think about Parkinson's disease as opposed to just a benign tremor?
So some of the differences, and this, they can overlap. Let me say that. You can have both, but some of the differences are benign essential tremor often affects both hands. It is very common with eating or writing. People with benign essential tremor, it will often involve the head, the voice, the lips. It often runs in families. Benign essential tremor, you'll hear it called familial tremor. Mm-hmm. It will temporarily improve with alcohol. And it doesn't have the other associated features,
right,
the stiffness and slowness, and that helps us distinguish.
Mm-hmm. And if it's a classic pill rolling tremor, then have you seen anything besides Parkinson's be a classic pill rolling tremor? You never like to say never.
Well, you never say never. And the thing about Parkinson's tremor, it's not always the classic pill rolling tremor. I mean, they can, just like Terry described, have tremor with trying to hold a cup or write. So there's some variations on that. But it often does start with one-sided at rest.
And as Terry mentioned, in his case, it was one-sided.
That's yes. Right. Yes.
So Terry, getting back to your case, you saw Dr. Ledoux, and at some point, Carl, were you able to make the diagnosis on the first visit, or how'd that work out? Or you maybe not remember.
I don't know that I remember. Okay. I think I suspected it at the beginning.
I guess my question is, at what point did I begin therapy?
I think we started therapy pretty early, and it's important to mention that because Terry is young and was very young at the time, that makes that's very important in choosing your therapy, because levodopa is the mainstay of treatment. However, we do try to hold off on that in younger patients because as time goes on, there's complications of that treatment.
And levodopa is an oral medication.
Yes.
And there are complications
of the treatment itself
that
will develop over the long haul. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So therefore, if someone is young, like Terry, we try to use other choices first.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point, knowing we probably will have to use levodopa, but we try to delay that if possible.
So in evaluating Terry's case, what conclusions did you come up with as far as initiating therapy at this young age?
At the young age, we start with a group of medicines called dopamine agonists at the time, which can have their side effects too, but they can be beneficial in treating tremor, stiffness, slowness. But again, it can delay the initiation of
the
levodopa.
And can you give us a couple names of some dopamine agonists? Or I guess agonists, of course, meaning have this, exerts a similar effect as the dopamine.
What dopamine agonists do is they increase the amount of dopamine available to the brain and help replace the missing dopamine. There's rapinrol, there's pramipexol, there's bromocriptine, there's apomorphine are the chemical names.
What are some brand names?
Brand names. There's Requip.
Okay.
Which is rapinrol. There's pramipexol, which is Mirapex. Apomorphine, I'm not sure. I don't recall the brand name. That's an injectable.
Okay. And which did you try or initially on Terry's case?
We used Mirapex.
Okay. And Terry, what did you think about the Mirapex?
Well, it immediately helped.
Really? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I actually came to you, doctor, for about a month before you decided to give me some kind of medication. But I might be wrong there, but she did start me on the Mirapex, and I immediately started feeling better. And
when you say immediately, you're talking within a day or two?
Well, not within a day or two, but I would say within a week to 2 weeks. I was doing much better than I was 2 weeks before, and it progressively got better.
Very nice.
It didn't last as long as I hoped. We increased the dosage over a period of time, every month or every couple of months. It was increased a little bit, but
is that typical,
it worked.
Is that typical, Carla?
It's not uncommon that you have to push the dose. Yes.
What's happening there that you have to continue to increase the dose? Is it less effective with time, or?
Well, the disease still
it's
progressing.
A progressive disease.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a progressive disease.
Okay. So, all right. So, are you still taking the Mirapex, or did you reach a point where, Carla, you decided to move on to a different medication?
Well, Terry had some side effects with the Mirapex, and as new drugs came on the market, I'm trying to remember the sequence. I think we may have added. Did we add Azilect next, Terry?
I think we may have.
Yeah, I think we added.
And then you went to the Stalevo.
Right. I think we added Azilect Neck, which is a different class. There's certain classes of medications, and they can be used alone or in combinations. And Azilect, which is the Rasagiline, is a mono MOAB.
Okay.
And this is another drug which kind of pumps up dopamine in a different manner.
And you had mentioned earlier in the show that that's the drug that potentially could slow down the disease progress.
And actually, at the time that we added that, we didn't know that.
Okay.
But we did know that it helped tremor, and it can help rigidity. And it's just in pure observation, we noticed that patients on Azilect seemed to fall down less. It seemed to be the first drug that just kind of, in hindsight, I just observed on my own that patients, the postural instability or the poor balance seemed to improve on that drug, which is the first drug that we'd ever noticed that. Now, recently, there's been some clinical trials that are suggesting that this drug may actually be disease-modifying. So that's another reason to start patients early on it and stay on it. It's symptomatically helpful, and it might possibly be disease-modifying.
And could it be used in conjunction with other therapies?
It's either what we call monotherapy, either by itself or adjunctive, add-on,
And so, Terry, are you still taking Azilect?
Yes, I do. I take one Mirapex a day. I take Azilect one a day, and then I take the Stalevo.
Okay.
So as time marched on, then we finally had to bring on Stalevo, which is the combination of levodopa and something called Comtan, which is another way to prolong the effect of levodopa and keep your levodopa dose down. So these are drugs all from different classes or mechanisms of action that work in complement with one another.
And how would you, Terry, how would you assess your status today on these three medications vis-a-vis what it was like when you first presented to Dr. Ledoux?
Well, I mean, it's progressed quite a bit since I originally saw her, but I do notice that when we moved to Stalevo from the Mirapex, I had a lot less pain, even though, I mean, there's no way, I guess, to get rid of the pain. It subsided a lot from what it originally was because the tremor wasn't as severe.
So, are you drawing a relationship between the pain and the tremor?
Well, yes, because if you have a movement, voluntary or involuntary, all day long, believe me, you'll feel it at the end of the day.
Is this like a muscle spasm type pain?
That's right.
And, I see.
So your arm will hurt or your leg will hurt. I have a tremor in my leg, and that is if the tremor is less, then of course, then there's less pain.
And Carla, in this setting of patients with these tremors and this rigidity, is massage therapy or physical therapy a significant or important part of the overall treatment of patients?
Well, keeping patients mobile is very important. But going back to the idea that these patients do have pain, and we're not sure why, but keeping the best treatment is replacing the dopamine, which the levodopa does, and it really is the gold standard of therapy. But for Terry, we were able to hold off about 5 years, I think, on that, because he's so young.
Mm.
And we know that within 5 to 10 years of starting levodopa, patients will develop motor complications, i.e., everyone's seen Michael J. Fox with the dyskinesia, and that's what I'm referring to, the moving around uncontrollably.
And there's no, at this point in time, there's no therapy for that.
Well, one therapy is the surgical intervention to lower the dose of the levodopa.
The deep
brain stimulation surgery,
which we'll get into after the next break. Okay, and Terry, what are you doing for your? You said I think you said the last medication you started taking has helped your pain.
Yes. I assume it probably will never go away, but it's, I would say, 50% of what it was at one time. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that has a lot worse to deal with than I do.
So, Carla, what else could you offer these patients that have the muscular spasm type of pain from their rigidity and tremors?
Well, the ultimate treatment is, again, keeping the disease under control,
right.
You know, in balance with looking down the road. Secondly, I mean, you can treat just like you would any other muscular pain, anti-inflammatories, muscle relaxers, but you also have to balance side effects mm-hmm. from those medications. Patients also can have a tendency to have passing out easier, so you have to be careful with the side effects of the medicines you're using to treat pain.
Okay, and we'll be right back with more on Parkinson's disease on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Back in a flash.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, we're back with more on Parkinson's disease. And Terry, Carl and I were talking, Dr. Ledoux and I were talking on the break about some kind of exercise to help try and reduce some of your muscle, your related pain. Have you tried Tai Chi, yoga, those kinds of interventions?
Yeah, actually, the last time I saw Dr. Ledoux, I told her that I had an exercise regimen that I had really started. I exercised my legs, tried to, three times a week. And we have a yoga class that I just spoke to him about a week ago to see if I could join, and that starts up in about 30 days. So it's, you know, a lot of the stuff you have to do for yourself. You know, someone else can't do it for you.
Right. So you're going to give it a shot and see if it can relax the muscles without resorting to more pharmaceuticals.
Right. There is something I'd like to say. The this is something that maybe someone could relate to very easily.
Mm-hmm.
When I bring my arm up like I'm going to show a muscle,
mm-hmm.
It feels like I've wrapped my arm with a bandage and then brought my arm up, and you can feel the resistance of the bandage bringing it back down. Elastic bandage,
mm-hmm.
You can feel the resistance. And the other thing is when the pills kick off, because they do, they're on and off sometimes, you know they're coming off because when walking, it actually almost feels like you're walking through water.
Mm-hmm.
You start feeling a resistance. And that's something I noticed, and you know, that might be something that someone else might notice also.
Mm. So I guess obviously these medications, they're once a day, Carla?
No, some of them are once a day, some of them are several times a day, and what Terry's describing mm-hmm. is, again, disease progression. You start getting these on-off periods where just what Terry's describing, he's on when the medication is on, but you get kind of a wearing-off phenomena. And this will continue to progress, and we'll have to modify. We have to keep modifying the medication regimen. We may even have to modify meal time to minimize interference. A high protein meal mm-hmm. can interfere with the levodopa. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And these medications. Is there any way to prolong the duration of activity? You mentioned one way, perhaps, to increase absorption. So you have more medicine that's absorbed. Is there any way to increase the duration of action?
There's a long-acting formulation of levodopa. You can use that combined with short-acting. You again have to start spacing them out during the day. It gets quite complicated, the mm-hmm. regimen. Adding the what's called Comtan, the COMT inhibitor, which is what Stalivo is. It's a combination.
Mm-hmm.
of carbidopa and this and another drug that prolongs the effect of the carbidopa. So there's all kinds of fine tuning, but it's a never ending process really, because the disease progresses on with time. So every 3 to 6 months, depending on the patient, maybe sometimes longer in the beginning of the disease, the regimen may have to be tuned.
Mm-hmm. So it's an ongoing piece of work.
Right. It's a work in progress.
Right? And it's essential, obviously, for the patient to work closely with their neurologist because, and I don't know how frequently you see these patients, but I imagine it's not unusual to have to kind of tweak the medications every couple of visits.
Correct.
Okay. And let's, Terry, do you have another question or comment you want to make at this point where we are here?
No, sir.
All right, let's talk about future stuff. Let's talk a little bit about deep brain stimulation. An article just came out in the Journal of the American Medical Association talking about the effect of deep brain stimulation versus best medical therapy for patients with advanced Parkinson's disease, which for that matter may not even really be, Terry may not even be in that category, advanced Parkinson's disease, but your sense, Carla, about where we are on deep brain stimulation, what's proposed to be, what's mechanism of action supposed to be, and what do you see for the role of that in the future?
Well, it's actually been around for probably, 10 or 15 years now. This supersedes the old what we call lesioning procedures like pallidotomy or thalamotomy, where there was actually a lesion created to a certain part of the brain to stop tremor or rigidity. In this procedure, a probe is inserted deep into the brain and stimulates a particular part of the brain versus lesioning it or destroying it. And then an electrode or a wire, if you will, is tunneled under the skin down to a pacemaker into the chest. And then that pacer, just like a cardiac pacer, can be programmed via a telemetry monitor. And what this does, by stimulating different areas of the brain, deep in the brain, the area where dopamine is made, you can minimize the need for medications such as carbidopa. And this has been shown to be useful for patients who are, one, still DOPA responsive, and two, patients who are not demented or severely cognitively impaired. I myself have had several patients with deep brain stimulators, and I have done the programming for some of them, and I have seen it drastically reduce the need for levodopa by about 50%. The long-term effects, really, we don't know yet. Long-term, is this going to be better than medical therapy? I think that remains to be seen. Probably underutilized. I think my impression is that we probably are underutilizing this and waiting maybe too late to utilize it.
And I guess, of course, as you said before, it's always nice to consider, if you have to go to surgical procedure, it's nice to be a stimulating procedure rather than a destructive procedure.
Right. It can be just turned off if it's deemed not useful.
And how nice it is to be able to avoid the long-term use of DOPA with the dyskinesias.
Right. It's usually not considered for someone before they're needing L-DOPA at this point. But, it remains to be seen which is going to be superior. But I have seen it drastically reduce, I mean, cut in half how much dopamine patients need.
There were some so-called adverse events from that study. That is, there were some adverse events relating to the surgical procedure itself. And again, I guess I would expect that with time and more expertise and experience of doing the surgical procedure, that should be drastically reduced as well.
Well, like most procedures with time, yes, the risk of stroke and hemorrhage, those are the main complications, will be minimized. There's also other things I've seen with patients. Patients can end up with dystonia or abnormal contractions or dyskinesia, abnormal motor movements. Usually those can be handled by adjusting the parameters of the programming or adjusting medications.
Okay, and one last question on stem cells and Parkinson's disease. What's your perspective on that? We've got 1 minute.
Stem cells are adult stem cell research is very promising. There's many studies going on looking at using adult bone marrow, which can differentiate, meaning grow into brain cells that make dopamine and then be implanted into specific target areas of the brain where the dopamine is lacking.
Like the substantia nigra?
Correct. Or, correct. Now, it's been quite successful in many trials using adult stem cells. There's a greater advantage using adult stem cells because embryonic stem cells have a risk of forming tumors. Mm-hmm. So.
And how far away are we from offering that generally to the general population in need? Best ballpark, what's your best guess looking to your crystal ball?
Probably 10 years, not that I have a crystal ball, but probably 10 years.
Terry, last chance. Any questions before we...
No, okay. No, doctor, and thank you for having me on the show, Dr. Ledoux. That was very nice of you.
Oh, well, thanks for doing it.
And we thank you, Terry. Thank you, Dr. Carl Ledoux, as being my special guest expert on Parkinson's disease today. Next Sunday on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, we'll be tackling sinus disease with Dr. Donald Lanza, otolaryngologist. This is Dr. Steve Maskin wishing you a great week, and hope, again, you've learned significant pieces of information about Parkinson's disease to help you or your family members or loved ones that may be facing this dreadful disease. We'll have a great week and see you next week. Bye-bye.